Prince Charles Dickson, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
Could you describe for us what the term Boko Haram really means?
The term itself is a creation of the media. A creation of the media, a creation of the people within the Axis where its oppression has lasted over the last couple of years. But Boko Haram is an acronym for Jamaatul Nasrullahi Abjuwaz. That's the body itself, which actually translates to mean a movement, an Islamic sect, against Western education and civilization and all it stands for.
And what's the most recent activity in northern Nigeria that Boko Haram has perpetrated?
Just yesterday, there was a bomb blast in a viewing center where the England-Italy match was actually taking place.
So they bombed a group of people watching a football match?
Yes, in a predominantly Christian vicinity. There were a couple of churches around that area, but it was late in the evening.
Boko Haram has been bombing Christian churches, though, as a matter of habit, for a couple of years now. That is a pattern, as I understand it.
Yeah, but initially, it wasn't targeting Christians. When they started, the first target happened to be other Islamic sects, Islamic scholars and Islamic clerics who disagreed with them. That was the initial. The first killings were not targeted at Christians.
Oh, yes, these were Muslims they considered to be too moderate, is that right?
Yes, that was what I said initially. They were targeting people who disagreed with them, who were their fellow Muslims.
And then it escalated to churches. Now, Nigeria is a divided population, but the religious groups are pretty intense, so I gather that those attacks on Christian churches would have killed many people because the churches are usually full.
Yes, if you talk in terms of available figures, depending on whose figure you want to take, you have the Red Cross figure, you have the official figure, but to strike a balance between those figures in those last couple of years, stretching from 2009, you'll be talking about 3,014 thereabouts.
3,014 people.
Yes.
When did Boko Haram turn its attention to Christian churches away from those moderate Muslims?
Somewhere around 2010, the attack moved to Christian churches, Christian targets, first in Borno State, north of Nigeria, and then it started moving into other states within the northern Axis of Nigeria.
And do we know what the impetus for this change of direction was?
Initially, the idea was that they had killed their leader, and then they were targeting security forces. Most people were comfortable because it was Boko Haram versus the government. And so people went about their businesses and felt government should take care of it. And then the Christian population, churches came into the fray, and the whole mix turned about. And then somewhere in the middle of 2011, they started talking about the issue of the Sharia and Islamization of the northern part of the country. And then by extension, they started giving out statements to most of us journalists that they would not stop until the country becomes a Muslim state.
So this was really linked in by this stage to a kind of worldwide jihadist push, from what you're saying.
That's correct. That's very, very correct. That was when we started suspecting there was a connection between the worldwide jihad movement, the Al-Qaeda connection had come into the fray. We started putting things together at that point.
Yes, you have been investigating this at length. What have you discovered about links between the Boko Haram and Al-Qaeda?
The links, from what we found out from sources that cannot be mentioned, is that when it comes to issues of financing, there is a link, because when you look at the use of IEDs, the use of bombs, these are not things you get in the local markets. And then when you also put it against the backdrop that in the north, particularly where the operations have been carried out in the last 2 years, the bombing of the churches and Christian targets, these are predominantly areas where there is a high level of poverty. So it's not like you have people who can just walk into the market, pick up these items and have those bombs made. They get sponsors and we track sources of some of those finances, and we have reason to believe that those finances are coming from into the country from this Al-Qaeda key points. Places like the Yemen, places like even Saudi Arabia, and places like Pakistan. And we've had issues where, or cases where, when arrests were made and were able to get confessional statements through various sources, these people confess that they have funding coming from Al-Qaeda and its network.
Is the Nigerian government aware of this funding? If you say it's coming from other sovereign nations like Saudi Arabia and even Pakistan, is the Nigerian government aware of this?
In most cases, they are aware. But you see, there is also the diplomatic point of it, trying to create a balance, trying to maintain diplomatic relationships at the expense of the ordinary Nigerian citizenry. I'll give you an instance. Just 2 years ago, there was a shipment of IEDs, bombs and rocket launchers that came in all the way from Iran. And after a lot of noise, the investigation hit a dead end. Now, the question would be, those items that came in from Iran, for what purpose were they? Who was responsible? Where were they going to? You know, these are questions we journalists wanted to find out. But interestingly, as it is the case in most investigative stories in Nigeria, you get to a point, no official is willing to talk, and then when you go further than that, you put your life in jeopardy.
Prince, do you get the feeling from your investigations that there are Boko Haram sympathisers within the government in Nigeria who may be helping to ease the passage for this weapons, for this funding?
Yes, not just in the government. Not just in the government. There are Boko Haram moderates and sympathizers within the security network. There are people who will tell you, you don't even say anything to the security network because you don't know who is Boko Haram and who is actually a clean security personnel. So within the executive system of a government, within the security network of a government, I tell you this with a sense of certainty and with a lot of confirmation, having investigated some of these stories, that there are Boko Haram sympathizers. And I think you hold your breath there, and I say to you, there are actually Boko Haram members in the security network that have infiltrated the security system.
This sounds remarkably similar to the situation in Pakistan, where it is thought that members of the ISI, the Secret Intelligence Network, are in league with elements of Al-Qaeda.
Exactly. That's what we have here. So most of the times when there is a sting operation or there is a possibility of hitting a Boko Haram hideout, you find out that hours before that operation takes place, there is always a leak. And that leak can happen if they don't have an insider.
Prince, as I understand, in recent weeks there have been retaliatory attacks by some Christian groups. Do you get the feeling that this is turning into a fully fledged religious war?
If it's not contained, it will turn into a fully religious war because the Christians are saying, we can't take this anymore. It would interest you to know we are in the month of June. And every Sunday since the beginning of June, there has been a target on a church. Every Sunday.
And these attacks, I believe they're what, bombings, or are they one-on-one attacks?
Suicide bombings.
So this is the classic pattern of a jihadist terrorist group.
That's correct. So every Sunday, there is a terrorist attack on a particular church. Every Sunday. So now that it has become an every Sunday thing, apparently it is targeted at the Christians. And because it is targeted at the Christians, there is the tendency, which has happened 2 Sundays ago, people to retaliate. And then the retaliation on Friday, the security apparatus claimed that they had caught some people attempting to detonate a bomb at a praying mosque. So if you now hit a mosque, it is apparent that the retaliation, you're treading the line of a full-fledged religious war.
These attacks and the retaliatory attacks, are they building on any underlying tension in the area?
Over the years, there's always been the case of dominance. There's always been the case of fighting towards for scarce resources. The root causes of some of those problems, apart from the Islamic agenda or the dominating Islamic world agenda, one of the key issues is that there's been an apparent lack of good governance. So you have an area that is largely filled with poor people, and these poor people are willing tools to perpetrate some of this violence. And so over the years, there's been underlying tension in these places.
I've also read reports that Boko Haram could also be a tool for groups and individuals who are less concerned with religion, but more concerned about some of those other classic grievances about wealth and access to mineral resources, because Nigeria is a very resource-rich country.
Yes, but that again is another exponent of the entire Boko Haram phenomenon. People will tell you, and rightly so, that we have different faces of Boko Haram. You have Boko Haram with links to Al-Qaeda, which is perpetrating religious violence with the aim of the Islamic agenda. And then you now have criminal acts which are now perpetrated under the umbrella of Boko Haram. For example, a bank is robbed and explosives are used in robbing that bank, and people claim it is Boko Haram. But it's not Boko Haram in its real sense. These are just armed robbers. These are just criminal elements. Then, of course, you have those who believe that we can use Boko Haram as a tool to bargain with the federal government to get some sort of compensation. That, again, is there. Yesterday, the president spoke to the nation, and he said they were willing to dialogue with Boko Haram. But, again, Boko Haram has to show a face. There has to be a face for Boko Haram. There has to be somebody who claims to be Boko Haram for the government to negotiate. Yeah, there has to be a face to Boko Haram. The issue now is that some of those journalists actually have access to Boko Haram, which the government doesn't have or claims not to have. So the government is saying, okay, while we're willing to talk, who do we talk to?
Now, is Boko Haram in some sense rather like those other Islamist groups such as Hezbollah, which, in addition to the kind of jihadist and religious elements, they're effectively de facto welfare providers? Is there any similarity there?
Initially, yes. On the onset, there was this collectivism, this social welfare system, but that was originally used to advance the cause of getting people to be sympathetic with them. Apparently, with the poverty, the large-scale poverty within the northern part of the country, it was easy to promise people, we'll give you this, we'll give you this, just come join us and let's fight this war. But as it is now, there is no such thing, because the nose is also tightening within the financial sector to be able to see where those funds are coming from. And so it's not what it used to be. It started that way, but it's not that way anymore. Now it's a clear case of acts of terrorism.
Has the government of Nigeria tried to undermine Boko Haram in any sense by improving its own services, its own welfare?
It has not done that. It hasn't done that because there is a country that is largely divided between the north and the south. So each time you take an effort or you take a step at doing something for one section of a country, the other section of the country cries foul. So the issue has also been about creating a balance. A balance of what we want to do, how we want to do it, and when we want to do it. That's where the problem is.
Now, you mentioned that Boko Haram's original targets were moderate Muslims. In recent months or even weeks, has there been any attempt by Muslim groups or leaders to push back against Boko Haram, to condemn Boko Haram?
No. What we have are what we call lame condemnations. Not just the Muslim moderates, but leadership in the north, because they themselves believe that when they talk, they become targets. So they've been very, very careful with what they say. We've had situations where Boko Haram kills an Islamic cleric for condemning it. So most people don't want to come out and say Boko Haram is wrong or is un-Islamic. On the contrary, they talk from both sides of the mouth so that they can keep alive. And that's part of the problem. So Christians are saying, if you say it's not about Islamization, if you say it's not about Muslims, why don't you condemn it?
But Prince, didn't I read, though, where the local governor, who is a Muslim, and I think the local sultan have been quite critical of Boko Haram, have condemned these attacks?
The question is, Andrew, when you condemn the attacks, what happens? You condemn the attack on Sunday, and there's another attack on Sunday. So people are beginning to get tired of the condemnation. People are saying, don't condemn them. People are saying, do something.
And what are the options open to the Nigerian government to contain the Boko Haram attacks and I guess to try to limit retaliatory attacks?
I think the options are opening up. It depends on what the government wants to do. Number one, the problem is, Andrew, in Nigeria, the government has not declared Boko Haram as an enemy. It's not been declared as an enemy, and that's why a lot of people are vexed with the issues. The Nigerian government is yet to say, this is an enemy. They're still using terms like, let's see your face, let's dialogue, let's talk. It's like the policy you have there in Australia, I think. You don't negotiate with terrorists, you don't negotiate with kidnappers. On the contrary, here, the government is saying, let's talk. You want to talk with people who are killing Christians and killing your citizens every day. People find that really, really absurd. That is not a solution, but the government is looking at that as a solution. Secondly, the United States government, through Congress, has designated Boko Haram as a terrorist organization. And a section of the country is saying, U.S. having done that, it's like a free meal ticket for the U.S. to wake up and come into Nigeria and flush them out.
So is
people
that the...
People will say, go ahead.
I was going to say, so is that partly what many Nigerians want? A military intervention by the United States?
Yes, Nigerians want the one solution by all means. And if that is an option, Nigerians are willing to take it. If you sample opinion around most of this North Pass, people are now saying it's like an Osama thing. They believe if the U.S. comes into it, they believe that the Nigerian government is incapable. And if the U.S. government comes into it, it could just be the signal at the end, the beginning of the end. The top three of the hierarchy of Boko Haram have been declared international terrorists and wanted. So that's enough reason for the U.S. to come into Nigeria and hunt them. And people believe that if you can hunt them down, if you can take those people out, which the Nigerian government is not willing to take out, it might be the beginning of a solution of the problem.
Well, Prince Charles Dickson, with that dramatic note, we'll end it. Thank you very much indeed. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you so very much.